moment. It's the Kyle Selagi Variety Hour. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Kyle Selagi Variety Hour, brought to you by USA Today Sports Media Group's Bill's Wire. We have a jam-packed episode today. We're making, collectively, six bold predictions for the Bills 2019 regular season, and I'll tell you right now, they're bold. A few of them contradict each other, but hey, we got to get to six somehow. We're each doing two. I have two wonderful guests with me here today. And I will introduce them now. Let's get that out of the way. Let's introduce them. We have returning for the 25th consecutive week, it's Justin DeLauro. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm like Ken Jennings. I'm back every time.
Exactly. That's great. It's good to have some continuity here.
It's such a horrible metaphor.
Or you have to make it for the millennials, James Holzhauer.
Yes.
And then also making his debut.
Woo!
It's Bill's Wire podcast host, Jeremy Uhas. Jeremy, how are you?
I'm good. It's fun to be on this Variety Hour podcast with you guys.
Ah, thank you. It's an hour full of variety, if you will. So, Jeremy, when talking about your title, do you say, like, co-host or host? Are you, like, complimentary host?
Yeah, I think we're kind of co-host. You know, Matt Johnson, kind of operates and pieces together, produces the Bills Wire podcast, and along with myself, we'll have Brad sometimes do post game, record some post game commentary after every game this year. I think we're going to try to continue to do that. Pretty much co-host, I think, is probably an appropriate title.
You guys are killing it over there. I plug you guys at the end of every Variety Hour. I'm like, go listen to them. They do great work, and I hope both of our podcasts are doing well. I hope that we're complimentary podcasts. We're like Thurman Thomas and Kenneth Davis. We're complimentary. That's the first thing that came to my head when I thought of complimentary was two running backs I never saw play. But before we get started here today, we have a bit of housekeeping. Just a little bit of housekeeping here. Some prefaces. So, just so everyone knows, we're recording this podcast on a Saturday afternoon, and this goes out on Tuesday morning. So if some crazy thing happens between now and Tuesday morning when this goes out, just know we're not talking about it because it didn't happen yet. We're recording this on Saturday because I'm celebrating my birthday tonight, and then on Sunday, tomorrow, I don't plan on being in any condition to talk for an hour straight, and then Monday is my actual birthday. So we're we're recording it today to get it out of the way. And then, that's it. So if the Bills trade for Jadeveon Clowney or, Melvin Gordon and we don't talk about it, we don't even mention it, it's because it didn't happen. But then also, I kind of just predicted it now, so I'm the source. Per Kyle Selagi, Bills acquire Jadeveon Clowney. And then also, if you notice something different when clicking on this podcast, because I know our devoted viewers, they love the old logo. I've gotten thousands of compliments on the old logo. But we changed the logo, or I changed the logo. There's no royal we. I got tired of the logo. I'll be honest. I had seen the logo somewhere before. It was kind of subconscious. I made the Kyle Selagi Variety Hour logo, the neon, looked like a neon sign. And then, like, subconsciously, I was like, that looks good. That looks good, but also kind of looks familiar. So then last week, I was going through YouTube, and I don't know if you guys know who Steven Crowder is, but he's a man. That's where I'll leave it. I saw his logo, and his show logo, or one of his show logos, looks very similar. And I was like, okay, that's subconsciously, I saw that somewhere and made my logo kind of looking like that, not knowing about it. So then I was like, okay, need a new logo. Don't want to be associated with Louder with Crowder. But I made a new logo. And also, merch is something I'd like to make eventually. Even back when Rob Quinn was managing editor, I always told him, hey, we should have Bills Wire merch. Never happened. But I'd like to make Kyle Selagi Variety Hour merch someday, and I'm just going to be honest. I don't think anyone besides me wants to walk around with a shirt that says Kyle Selegi on it. So,
I want to sweat. I want like sweatbands. Like
stuff that would be great.
You know, different stuff, different types of merch. Not the traditional hats and T-shirts. Like I think we should make some, and you guys should pull together some sort of interesting merch products.
Just weird stuff.
Yeah, you know, just change it up.
That'd be great. That's like a great idea.
Pop sockets, you know, for your phone. Just different stuff. Yeah.
That's great. But then just quickly about the logo. Yeah, it's much cleaner. And there's a white square with a black buffalo on it now. So that's marketable. I can put that on all the merch. And people who don't even know what the Variety Hour is can be like, that's pretty cool. I don't hate that. So that's the housekeeping for today. Those are the updates. The Variety Hour updates. So
I would be happy if you made the logo royal blue.
Oh my god. Let's talk about that.
Oh, sorry.
Let's talk about that. So the Buffalo Sabres this week announced not this year they're not switching to royal blue, but next year they're switching to royal blue. And look, I couldn't care less about jerseys. I think their new anniversary jersey looks nice. I'm sure the royal blue jerseys are going to look nice. But I have two issues with this. One, Buffalo fans are stuck in the past. We've talked about this before. It's like, oh, I don't care about the quality of the team. Jeremy, I know you talked about this in Slack yesterday, and I'll throw to you after this. Mm-hmm. But I'm looking at this as like, Buffalo fans are like, oh, I really don't care about the team success, but as long as they look good finishing in 25th place and having the fifth or the sixth best odds at the number one pick, if they have royal blue jerseys on, that's fine. But also, it's kind of gross to me that the team announced it a year out. Their actual tweet was like, we're going back to royal blue jerseys in 2020-21, but for this year, we have our anniversary jersey. So it's just like, here, guys, buy this jersey this year, and then next year we're not going to have this jersey anymore, but we're going to have two new jerseys that you can buy. It's just like, you're just announcing it's a cash grab. That's all jerseys are cash grabs, really. So, Jeremy, I know you said yesterday in the Slack, you were like, oh, this is something that fans can actually have input on. So what are your opinions on the change to royal blue and then just fan reaction in general?
Well, I just, you know, I want to defend the organization a little bit because I think contractually I'm not sure that this year they could have even switched to royal blue.
That
given,
is true.
Given their Adidas, you know, kind of NHL agreement. So I'm not even sure that they had an option there. You knew for the 50th anniversary they were going to come up with something. And you're definitely right. From a marketing perspective, they're going to try to, you know, create these. We just talked about merch for the Selegi Variety Hour. But I think, you know, this is definitely like 10 with a professional sports organization. So I'm not surprised that they came out with that announcement, just given the constraints that they have. But, yeah, yesterday I said, you know, in conversations on Slack with everybody else, you know, it's just it's a process that – the Sabres needed to kind of address because fans were clamoring for it for so long, and where the GM and other high-ranking officials in an organization makes roster decisions, fans, you know, they can call or clamor however they want for new players and a better team, but I think they just have more of an opportunity to make an impact when they can, you know, call for different merchandising items. You know, I think the marketing team can kind of, from a business standpoint, create those discussions internally, and the organization would be foolish not to at least listen to what their fans want, because they're, I mean, have they been really good at all in this dark navy? No. I think that's why fans want to go back to something that they remember, because at least the team, you know, in the early 90s, late 80s were really good. Takes them back to the 70s and kind of how they started, and throwbacks are always popular, but it was also a time where the Sabres were actually a decent organization. So I don't really blame the fans for wanting to go back to something that was sharp and in an era that, you know, they were actually good, and kind of just would rid the last 10 to 12, 15 years of poor hockey. So I want to defend the organization a little bit for what they're doing. I think they're trying to do the best that they can to appease the fans, but also not just appease them, like really try to, you know, do something that's been a positive instead of, right, the team on the ice is what it is. So I don't know. That's just my take on the whole overall 40,000-foot view of the scenario.
Well, that's a very good point. And I do want to just say right now, I'm kind of a hypocrite because I'm like, the fans have been annoying calling for Royal Blue for 5 years. I couldn't care less.
Oh, it's definitely annoying, you know. I mean, it's overboard. But again, you'd be foolish if you're not the Sabres organization to dismiss how badly fans really want that. So,
yeah, that's true.
But it is annoying. Yeah, I can see, yeah. I can see how the contradiction would come up.
And then, like, for me, like, I'm about to be 22 years old. I didn't grow up with them in Royal Blue jerseys, so I don't have that nostalgia. But if they announced tomorrow, like, actually, we're switching to black and red, I'd be like, yes! Yes, this is what I've wanted for years!
That's a good point, too.
Yeah, it's like, I'm just like, oh, I don't care about the Royal Blue, but if they were like, oh, we're going to black and red, I'd be over the moon about it, because that's what I grew up with. I grew up with the 0506 team, Ryan Miller, Danny Briere, Chris Drury, the goat head. They were great. I never saw him play, but I have the red jersey. Do you remember the red jersey with the cross swords and it said Buffalo on the bottom? Ridiculous yes. jersey.
Was but that where they had like a huge puck in the middle? It was just yes. a big black circle.
Yep. Yes, big black circle, and then
I don't know what
two
that was supposed
ridiculous
to be.
Swords.
Yeah.
But and then I have a Doug Gilmore jersey of that. Mm-hmm. It cost me $250. Oh. More than any new jersey would cost, but hey, Doug Gilmore played for the Sabres for 2 years.
2 years.
I think they had the jersey for like one of the years he was here. So it's a very specific jersey from a very specific time, a time that I didn't see, but I'm glad to have the jersey. So, D'Lo, what do you think about this switch to Royal Blue? Do you care?
Not really. To be honest, I mean, it's all about nostalgia. I mean, I am older than y'all, so I like the Royal Blue. It's kind of what I grew up with. I can remember in the mid-90s when the team went to the black and red and people kind of lost their minds, especially with the goat head, because it was just so different and it was like shockingly different. And the team went to the Stanley Cup shortly after, so nobody really cared.
Yep.
I mean, they've been to the Stanley Cup finals in black and red and in royal blue, and the navy blue didn't pan out
this
so
year.
Well.
This year, D'Lo.
This year?
This year they're going to the Cup finals in the navy blue, but continue.
You think so?
No.
with their number two center that might retire mid-season again. Can you imagine if Marcus Johansson pulls a Berglund and just like, you know what?
I'm tired. Go back to Sweden.
I'm tired. Good luck, all you Rasmuses. So, I mean, I think it's cool. I mean, the only thing that I think is kind of a pain is that the jerseys continually change every few years. Mm-hmm. So you never have that, like, sense of tradition anymore. Like, you look back at jerseys from the 70s and 80s. These teams didn't have, you know, five different versions of a jersey. You know, even, like, different sports, college sports, whatever. You didn't have Oregon with a different jersey every week. You know, you just had that traditional jersey. And I kind of like that a little bit more than kind of switching all the time. But whatever. I'm still going to buy the damn thing, so it doesn't matter.
And I feel like they switch manufacturers a lot more.
Yes.
Oh, they
yes.
do like, all the time.
You'll go from Adidas to Nike to CCM to, you know, whoever gets that next contract that the league wants to partner with dictates a lot about what the jersey will look like. So I do remember when they switched to Adidas, how big of a deal that was. So, yeah, that's always something to monitor and can frustrate fans. Kyle, do you know what your Gilmore jersey is? That like a CCM jersey?
I want to say it's a Coho.
Oh, nice.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's yeah.
I don't even know if that's a company anymore.
That, no, it might be, but
if so, they're not in the jersey game. It's just the Sabres, they've had an identity crisis for as long as I've been alive. Or just like for 30 years or something, they had this same logo, same jersey, everything. And then, like you said, D'Lo, 90s, they're like, we're going to change it all up, midlife crisis. Let's go black and red, modern, 90s, we're cool. And then 10 years later, fans are like, okay, we kind of want the blue and gold back. Then they're like, oh, you want the blue and gold? Okay, here's a slug. And then and then 5 years later, they're like, oh, you didn't want the slug? Okay, here's the old logo, but we're sticking with navy blue. And it's just like, why? Yeah. Just, like you said, Jeremy. Fans have been clamoring for this for years, and it took them 10 years or 15 years to finally get it right, to finally get the change to blue and gold right. It's crazy. But hey, that's this team. That's this team.
If they would have just given that slug some legs, it would have looked awesome. It would look like a mutant charging buffalo, and it would have been fine. But the no legs just
made it look like some sort of amoeba under a
microscope.
Yeah,
like single cell organism.
Do you think they were trying to maybe replicate the Bills logo a little bit, and that it's a charging buffalo, and then if they did give it legs, it'd be too similar? Do you think that's maybe a little bit of the holdup there?
I
think the curvature of the slug they were trying to go for, buffalo on skates where they're gliding. I don't really know what they were trying there, but I'm just trying to figure maybe they were going for the movement on ice as opposed to a charging buffalo on land.
It just looks like a slug with horns and scoliosis. It's just I just pulled it up and I'm like, man, this thing was rugged.
I loved the logo when it came out because I was 8 years old, maybe. I don't know. And I was just like, ooh, new logo. Really cool. I had all the merch. I had a Maxifin Aginoff shirt. I had hats. I was swimming in slug merch. And then when I grew up, I was like, oh, that's ugly. But, hey, gotta love falling in love with hockey when you're a kid. Everything's cool. And Maxifin Aginoff's your hero.
They found a way to mess stuff. Like, they went to blue and gold, and they're like, okay, you know what's a good idea? Let's have a third jersey, but let's pretend to cut it in half and have yellow on one side and navy blue on the other.
Oh, yeah.
And then our... what was Ted Black?
The president. He was Russ Brandon before Russ Brandon.
So when he said something like, well, if it's a turd burger, then I'll eat it or something.
Yep.
And I'm like, what the hell is going on with this organization?
They didn't know.
They
still don't know. All right.
Should we talk about the Bills?
Yeah, enough Sabres talk. Every time we bring up the Sabres on this show, it just devolves into 20 minutes of ranting. And this is going to be a long podcast anyway, because we have to get through 6 predictions. So let's just get into that. The Bills played a preseason game last night, Friday night, against the Panthers. Just kind of rolled over them. Absolutely. The first team just destroyed the Panthers, and then the rest of the guys did okay as well. But we're not going to go too deep into the preseason because Matt and Jeremy, I'm sure one of you will have a preseason recap or a takeaways podcast or something like that.
We did that last night.
Hey, look at you guys on the ball. So we're not going to get too deep into reviewing the preseason game because, we have another podcast that's already done that. So instead, we're going to talk about our 6 bold predictions for the regular season, and the number is 6, because I wrote an article a few years ago about 6 bold predictions for the Bills' 2018 offseason, and it did numbers, guys. So if we put 6 bold predictions in the title, this podcast is going to do numbers, hoping. So
just an excellent way to repurpose content.
Exactly. Evergreen content.
There you go.
So we'll go to you, Jeremy. What's your first bold prediction for the Bills' season?
Well, I sent you a couple prior to us jumping on here, and I'm going to change one of them, I'll keep the other. So my first bold prediction, I think Cole Beasley makes the Pro Bowl.
Ooh.
I think Cole Beasley and Josh Allen are really starting to develop something here that could turn into just a lot of stats. I'm not sure how it will translate into wins or losses for the team, although my second bold prediction would say it would turn out to be very well, but I do think that I'm encouraged by what they're already starting to do. Yesterday he looked great, so that is my first bold prediction, is Cole Beasley, first year as a Buffalo Bill, helping out Josh Allen to the point where he makes the Pro Bowl, which would be a huge deal for the Bills, who I don't know the last Pro Bowl wide receiver that the Bills have had. But that would be one bold prediction from me.
I can't even name someone. Did Stevie ever make it?
Was Eric Moulds? No, I don't know if he ever made
it. Did Sammy make it in that year, his rookie year?
Nobody from this decade.
Oh, geez. Probably should have done some more research.
I have the list right now. It's crazy.
Who was the last one?
Brian Moorman.
Brian Moorman, Pro Bowl receiver.
Travis Henry, Eric Moulds, 2003.
Yeah, I was gonna say Eric Moulds. So
that's what it looks like. Thank you, Wikipedia. Yeah, it's been a while.
Have they really not had a good receiver since then? Oh, they haven't had good quarterback since then. That's the issue. Okay,
right.
We figured it out. Okay, so yeah, that's a very good prediction. You saw, or we saw in general, a few weeks ago at training camp, LeSean McCoy was joking with Cole Beasley about how he's never been to a Pro Bowl. So, like you said, we see that the chemistry is there. There is a chemistry there, and that's reassuring to see after they've only shared the field with each other for two quarters of actual football. I thought Josh Allen yesterday looked great, especially in the connection with Cole Beasley. I wrote an article about this last night. It's not up right now. Maybe it'll be up before Tuesday. I don't know. It depends what Nick's doing. But Allen was quick to get the ball to Beasley. And too often last year, I think the lack of a reliable slot receiver hindered Allen. We know that Allen loves to go deep with a strong arm. And I think that's a part of the reason why he ran the ball 89 times last year. It, combined with the lack of an offensive line, not even a good offensive line, but just in general an offensive line. And if he didn't have anyone downfield, he never had anybody in the short to intermediate game, so he had to go. So I think this year with Cole Beasley, he's going to trust himself to get the ball to Beasley quickly. And we saw that yesterday. He was reading the defense quickly, getting the ball into Beasley's hands, and trusting Beasley to turn a 2 or 3 yard pass into a 6 or 7 yard game. And like you said, Jeremy, that will turn into stats over time. If Allen's just getting the ball into Beasley's hands, Beasley, there are few receivers in the league better at creating space off the line of scrimmage than Cole Beasley. So I think if Allen, like we've seen that he can do, if he consistently gets him the ball quickly, they are going, that's going to be a dynamic connection that could really result in Beasley going to the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, just looking over his stats, you know, 2016 was his best year with 75 receptions. I think he can get to that or more. He had 833 yards that season in 2016 for the Cowboys. If he can get to, be a 1,000-yard receiver and catch 80 balls from the slot, I think that'll be, you know, definitely someone on the bubble who could, you know, work his way into to a Pro Bowl bid. So I like Cole Beasley doing that this year.
Yeah, that's, again, something I could definitely see happening. D'Lo, I think you had a Cole Beasley-themed prediction as well.
Would you like Cole or would you like the Pro Bowl one?
Both
transition nicely.
I'll let you decide which one you want to transition to right now.
I'll do the less scintillating one. I'm going to say for the first time in 20 years, at least 5 Pro Bowlers will be selected from the Buffalo Bills.
Five.
I name upped them. It. I'm going 5.
So name right Stilo.
Now, ready? So I'm gonna go Trey White.
Ooh.
I'm gonna go Jerry Hughes.
Okay.
I'll say Tremaine Edmonds.
Ooh.
I think that could happen. I'm gonna say year 2 big jump for him. I'm also gonna throw.
You need 2 more. Muster up 2 more.
Damn. I know. Damn it. I'm going. You know what? I'll go. The defense is gonna be dominant. We're gonna go Micah Hyde.
Okay.
And then, for my surprise of all surprises, I'm gonna go. I'm gonna have Mitch Morris come back from his concussions.
Okay.
And he's gonna be dominant in the middle and lead a resurgence for our offensive line.
Yeah, that would be incredible.
That would be a solid 5. It's been 20 years since it was 1999 the last time they had 5 go to the Pro Bowl.
I was 2 years old.
Would you like to guess any of the 5?
I couldn't name the roster. All right, Doug Flutie, did he make it?
Doug Flutie, 99, yep.
Oh, good for him.
Bryce Pop.
No, that was 2 years before, yeah, but...
Look, I
like how I made this a game show.
I could name maybe 2 Bills from that team. Rob Johnson, Doug Flutie. All right. Thurman was around, right? That was end of Thurman,
that was
and
end
Andre
of Thurman.
And Bruce.
So Bruce was 99.
Oh, he made it?
He made it in 99, ooh, okay. So Flutie, Gash... Sam Gash at fullback.
What?
Bruce Smith, Reuben Brown, and Ted Washington.
Hmm. Ah, good for them. Oh, did they win a playoff game that year?
That might have been a playoff year.
It was a playoff year, and it was You know, it was the playoff memory that fans were left with for some time.
It was an interesting one. If you will. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think all of us, as we'll get into deeper into this podcast, I think we all have high hopes for the Bills this year. I think as people who, like, closely look at what this team does and analyze every single move they make, this regime has really made some positive moves. And I think, you know, again, being people who watched Josh Allen last year and just know what he needed, and seeing that the team added exactly what he needed in the offseason, and the defense pretty much stayed the same, which I'll explore again later with one of my predictions, I think this team is really going to make a big step, or make a huge leap. And if they do make that leap, I could see five players making it to the Pro Bowl. I really like your Edmonds prediction there. Edmonds, if he is a Pro Bowl middle linebacker at 21 years of age,
it'd be crazy.
Would he be the youngest ever?
That's a great question. I believe so. I cannot think off the top of my head of, you know, a rookie who is younger. And, you know, obviously Edmonds is so young.
That's still
in his sophomore season. That would be crazy.
That's still crazy that he's a sophomore at 21 years old. There's older rookies, and here's Tremaine, who's already led a defense for a year.
You want some more craziness?
Sure.
So the 1990 Bills, the 91 Pro Bowl, they had 10 players go.
They were good.
That was it. That was the watermark.
So Luke Kuechly at 22 made it to the Pro Bowl.
Oh.
Well, there's the connection.
There it is.
And he was first team all pro as well. Ooh. So that's Luke Kuechly's a monster, right? Probably arguably the best linebacker in the league. Didn't play last night, but if you're looking for a comparison, and I think Ron Rivera had some nice things to say about Tremaine Edmonds, it would be that, you know, at 22, making a Pro Bowl, being an all pro this year would be a huge step for Tremaine.
Yeah, I don't think Luke Kuechly, like, player-wise or talent-wise is necessarily a good comparison for Edmonds, but just in the role, because he's playing in the same role in the same defense. Mm-hmm. This is just... D'Lo and I met with Chris Perrone for lunch yesterday, and we talked about this. Bean and McDermott, seriously, are just looking at what they did in Carolina, saying, this is what worked, so we're going to do it here. So what do? They get an uber-athletic middle linebacker, and they go and get their version of Cam Newton on offense. So, we got a little sidetracked here with this prediction, but...
It's a solid one. It's good.
That'd be great. That would be incredible to see five Pro Bowlers, because, again, that would equal success. That means you had five of the best players in the league leading your team. So, yeah, I'll get into my prediction here, my first bold prediction, because it is kind of Tremaine Edmonds themed. My prediction is that the Bills defense finishes first in the league in total yardage, and Tremaine Edmonds totals over 140 combined tackles. Edmonds last year, I think he had like 120, 122 maybe. So I think this year, I think, like we said, knowing that he had a whole offseason now. He's gone through a whole year of being the leader of the defense, at least on the field. Kyle Williams was the leader in the locker room and everything, but even he kind of passed that torch to Tremaine at the end of last year. By the end of the season, Tremaine was the one who was at the front of the room and like leading the conversation during players-only meetings. And I want to say... Edmonds at the end of last season looked better than he did throughout the rest of the year. Now that makes sense, seeing that you improve as you understand the NFL game, but just I think he really did relish in that role of being a leader and being the guy in the defense, because Kyle Williams passed that torch to him towards the end of the year. So I think this year, having gone through a full season and an entire off season, now knowing that he's the guy, he's going to relish in that role. And I think 140 tackles is a reachable goal. That would put him probably near the top of the league in tackles, if not at the top of the league, which would be incredible. And then just first in the league in total yardage, the best defense in the league. That might sound like a bold prediction, but honestly, I think it's probably one of the tamer ones we're going to have, just because this defense is so good. They finished second in the league last year, and this is, again, this is a bold statement, but I think they improved in the offseason of bringing in Ed Oliver over Kyle Williams. Yes, Kyle Williams, 13-year veteran of the NFL, one of the most respected players in the NFL, knew how to play the game, but I don't think talent-wise there's really a comparison between Kyle Williams and Ed Oliver. I think from a pure talent perspective, Ed Oliver is a better player than Kyle Williams, especially given his age and just dominance. So I think if, again, Kyle Williams, probably more educated, a smarter player, or was a smarter player last year than Ed Oliver will be this year. But just if Ed Oliver, if he can adapt and learn the NFL game quickly, that defense, again, is going to improve, which is scary, especially considering that they were the second best in the league last year. So if this defense even improves this year, that's incredible. So, yeah, I think finishing with the best defense in the league is not really a bold prediction, but I think it makes its way onto this list. So what do you guys think about that?
I like it.
Thanks.
I think it's a nice one. I mean, it's natural that we think he'll make a very big step in his second year. So, I mean, think about it. Preston Brown had 144 tackles a couple years ago to lead the league. So, You know, we're thinking Tremaine with a stronger front four, you know, stronger defensive tackle combination ahead of him. He'll probably be able to get through some block shedding. So, yeah, I mean, I like the 140.
This guy's focused. I mentioned on my podcast or our podcast that's, you know, complimentary to this one. I actually got to see Tremaine Edmonds this year in Atlanta as he was training or while he was training down here, and he is a man child. I mean, he's got like
he is
a monster. I mean, I'm a pretty big guy. I'm 6'3", but I mean, he just towers over you. And you know, I think Ron Rivera called him a freak too, and a couple of the Panthers, you know, had a lot of great compliments to say. So I love this prediction. I think, you know, someone asked me, it was ESPN Rochester with Mike Battaglia when I was on there, asked me what I thought Tremaine Edmonds' ceiling could be. And I do think he could be an all-pro middle linebacker. I mean, he's got the frame. He's got the athleticism. I agree with you, Kyle, grew a lot in a short period of time toward the end of the season. Passing of the torch was huge. I think he's surrounded, too, by a great defensive line, right? I mean, you have Ed Oliver and Sarlat Hulle taking up blockers, giving him the chance to roam. You have two backers next to you that are going to clean up anything. So he's in a sweet situation. He's not, you know, kind of like Preston Brown was just forced to make all the tackles, you know, and a poor defense. I think he's going to thrive being on a very, very good defense. And I'm really excited to see what he can do. So I like it.
Yeah, I think both he and Josh Allen, I think they had their best games of the year in Week 17 last year. So that was a good thing to go into the offseason with, just knowing, like, okay, the season, it actually went better than many had planned. I did not see them winning six games with that roster. But to see Edmonds and Allen in a game that really meant nothing, that was really just there for a Kyle Williams feel-good moment, or a few feel-good moments. To see Allen and Edmonds really just show out and perform. I mean, Edmonds was all over the field that game. And then with a full offseason under his belt, if those performances, those dominant performances happen more than just in Week 17, if he can get, you know, 11 or 12 of those performances, yes, nobody is, then there's no defense better in the league, especially with his surrounding cast. We haven't even talked about the complimentary pieces, like you said, Jeremy, with even the secondary, Trey White, Micah Hyde, Jordan Poyer. That is an elite secondary. I don't care who you're lining up opposite Trey White. Levi Wallace, Kevin Johnson, who had a pick six yesterday. Or EJ Gaines is going to be injured, so either Johnson or Wallace. I don't care who you put. That's an elite secondary. And that defensive line, Trent Murphy has looked good this preseason. We saw the spin move in the preseason game. He looks like the Trent Murphy of old, so that's reassuring. Jerry Hughes, we know that he's dominant. Daryl Johnson, I've been honking the Daryl Johnson horn for months. I wrote in the Slack yesterday, one of these days I'm just going to make a compilation of everything I've ever said about Daryl Johnson on this podcast and upload it as its own episode. When Daryl makes the 53-man roster, I'll do that.
You can get a Daryl Johnson Royal Blue Sabre jersey.
I would get so many looks. He'll just be like, what is that? But that'd be hilarious.
Number 92.
Number 92.
Defenseman.
That would be hilarious. But then Ed Oliver, Jordan Phillips, Harrison Phillips rotating, Mike Love, Shaq Lawson. This defense is elite, and it will be the best in the league. So that's the predictions. Who did we start with? Jeremy, did you start with the bold predictions here?
I did.
All right, so we'll throw it over to you for your second bold prediction.
Well, like my first one where I had Cole Beasley making the Pro Bowl and likely for him to do that and have a really successful campaign, and then based off Justin's prediction of 5 Pro Bowlers, I have the Bills winning the AFC East.
Oh,
this year, I have them beating the Patriots. And I just think, you know, a couple of guys on NFL Network, analysts, have predicted this too as a bold prediction. Guys, at some point, the Patriots have to give up the division. Why not this year? I do think it is an elite defense. I'm not sure if it's enough to stop Tom Brady on a consistent basis, but if they can maybe split with them this year, I think they're pretty even with the Jets right now, so those will be close games. But they've looked really efficient so far in the preseason. I don't know, where there's a huge weakness. Probably say the offensive line still would be the biggest question mark. I think with Beasley and with John Brown, and even you have guys like Tommy Sweeney stepping up from the tight end position and all the running backs, I think they have enough skill talent to get wins this year. But will, the line hold up and give McCoy and company the room to run? That's the only real question mark I have. And, of course, knock on wood, injuries. But the beginning of the season will be huge. Obviously, mm-hmm. They have a little bit of softer schedule there. So if they can take advantage of that, I like, I don't think a lot of fans really love all of the, December, November home games. But I think that is an advantage for the Bills late in the season, even though those are harder contests to play. I just like the way that the schedule sets up. I just like what I've seen so far. And if we're going to go bold, I would rather go all the way here and say that they win the AFC East.
That's quite bold. But also, that's not out of the realm of possibilities. You look at their schedule, they start in New York twice, the Jets, Giants, then they go home for Cincinnati. They face the Bengals. I think those should be 3 wins. I think, like you said, the Jets on par, but I still think the Bills are a better team, a more complete team. Jets have bigger names, if you will, but with Le'Veon Bell, etc. But I think the Bills are probably the better team, the more well-rounded team. So I think that's a win. Giants, I don't even want to talk about the Giants, so I think that's a win. And Bengals, D'Lo, you and I talked about this last week before we recorded. The Bengals are just kind of an incompetent team. Andy Dalton is fine, but then A.J. Green, their top receiver, I think he's going to miss that game. So, I think that's a win as well. So if they can beat the Patriots week 4 at home and start out 4-0, they're going to roll into Tennessee and beat Tennessee, and then they're 5-0 going into their week 6 bye. And then after that, they come back to Miami at home, I do believe. Maybe it's Miami away, but they...
No, it's Miami home.
Okay, they come back to Miami home. Miami are trash boys. Miami's a very bad team, so they should beat Miami. And then their schedule starts to heat up a bit. But if they can start 6-0, you only need to win 10 more. Or not 10 more. You only need to win 4 more throughout the rest of the season. And then you have another game against New York, another game against Miami. Washington's in there. Washington's a beatable team. Pittsburgh doesn't have AB or Le'Veon Bell. Sure, Ben's still there, Juju Smith-Schuster, but Pittsburgh, that's a winnable game as well. So that's, again, even if you're assuming they lose to New England the second time, if they can sweep their division outside of New England, which is doable, and then pick up a few other wins there, yes, that's a 10-6, even an 11-5 season's possible. And that, if you said, like you said, Jeremy, if the Patriots take a step back this year, they could win the division with a 10-6 or 11-5 record. So I like that prediction. You can continue, Jeremy. Sorry.
No, sorry. I just wanted to point out that I think that the division's going to be clumped. It'll be one team at 7-9 or 8-8, and another team at 9-7, and then write the division winner at 10-6 or something like that.
Okay.
I don't see one team just winning 12 games like it has been a lot in the past with the Patriots, just, you know, winning 12, 13 games, which a lot of people still predict that they'll do. I think they, you know, lose 3, 4, 5 games this year at least before facing the Bills, and that's where, you know, I think they have a chance to win the division. But I do think it's going to be a tight race. I don't think, like, the Bills will get 13, 12, 13, 14 wins. They can win the division still, like you said, with 10, at most 11 wins. So that was my logic and reasoning based on how I think the division will shake out in its entirety.
That's, sound logic. D'Lo, anything to add to the bold AFC East winning prediction?
I mean, it's within reason. I mean, I do think it's still the Patriots' division until they fall off. But this is the year, looking at the Bills' schedule, where they could crank out some wins in mass this year, where we might not be worried about 7-9, where we might be thinking about double-digit wins, just because playing the AFC North and playing the NFC East, especially the NFC East, I'm not really scared as much by the NFC East right now, especially with Dallas possibly losing out on, you know, Ezekiel Elliott, whatever that, you know, whatever's going on in that land. I mean, I'm not scared of the Giants with Eli Manning or Daniel Jones. I mean, the Redskins could be trotting out Dwayne Haskins, who's still, you know, he's a rookie, so you have a veteran defensive mastermind like, you know, McDermott going up against that. I think that could be good. And you know what? The Eagles could be scary. But
but you have them at home.
But so, we have them at home, which helps. Big. I mean, maybe LeSean McCoy decides this is going to be the one game that he decides to go over 100, and they pull out a win at home. I mean, who knows? I mean, the Eagles did just sign Josh McCown, so.
Oh, if Carson Wentz goes down again, that's
Carson,
a win.
Carson, yes.
That's a win.
So,
destroyed McCown last year. But continue, sorry.
Yeah, no, sorry. 10 wins is not out of the realm of possibility, realistically, for the first time. Probably in a decade and a half for the Bills.
But Rex Ryan said they were going back to the playoffs. So that, what do that, you mean,
that,
realistically?
That chump said that they freaking won the offseason. As soon as he said that, it was over. Oh, I'm going to start yelling.
Oh, no.
No! Rex Ryan. Oh, we won the offseason. Mario Williams, go play defensive back.
Can I have another bold prediction, even though we were only allowed two?
Go for it.
I think Devin Singletary by midseason is your starting featured back.
Whoa!
There we go.
There's a bold prediction.
I think he kind of, you know, I still think Gore is sprinkled in around the goal line, but I think by that point, LeSean McCoy is not at the top of the depth chart, and Singletary kind of starts taking over. You'll see it slowly through the season, and they will start to slowly phase out LeSean McCoy. That is another prediction I have for the offense. He's just too good to keep on the sideline.
Yeah. I agree with that. But then to go off that, if Singletary takes over as the starting running back, are they going to trade McCoy? He's in a contract year.
Well, that's what I think, you know.
Okay.
Some people think if the Bills come out of the gates poorly, that would be a reason to get rid of McCoy. I think if they come out on fire, as you already kind of maybe outlined, Kyle, you know, if they go 4-0, 5-0 before the trade deadline in late October, that might, you know, inflate McCoy's value, and the Bills are in an advantageous position to get a good return for him. Mm-hmm. And still have a really good, you know, backup situation behind McCoy. I just think that, you know, if they play poorly, there's a reason to trade him. But I think also, too, if they come out to the gate and he looks really good, it's another chip that you can use to parcel out. And he doesn't have to look, you know, I think if he looks amazing or he's looking all pro, you're probably going to keep LeSean McCoy.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if he just looks like his old self and he has a couple 100-yard games every now and then in the first 6 weeks of the season, 8 weeks of the season, that could be, you know, something where a team is really desperate for a running back. We can get good value back.
Yeah, that's a very bold prediction. And, yeah, I do like Devin Singletary. He's looked good in the preseason, and I think yesterday they really didn't, or in the preseason game, they really didn't give him that many carries, which I think kind of shows that they have a role plan for him. Because if they don't want to give him carries in the preseason, it's like, okay, we've seen enough from you. We know you're good. We know we're going to utilize you in this specific way, so we're not even going to let you get that many carries. McCoy didn't get that many carries yesterday. Gore didn't get a carry. I don't even know if he was dressed. I think he was, but he didn't get a carry. So you saw the carries get divvied up between Perry, Murphy, Yeldon, and Wade. So, yeah, I do think Singletary is going to have a role. I don't know if he will ever become the featured back, but if he shows, like you said, that he's too talented not to be, then yeah, that would be, it'd be fun to see, because I do think Singletary is the back of the future. I think he's very good. So if he takes over that role this year, hey, that means they found a good one. So D'Lo, what's your second and our now? What is that? I don't know. I can't do math. What's your second prediction?
Second and fifth, but now sixth, because Jeremy has three.
Yes.
So we're into...
Sorry, I threw off to for the whole six to seven.
Seven bold predictions. Sorry. We'll do it. That's fine.
That's okay. Kyle's sixth bold prediction in the 2018 piece was that the Bills were going to trade for Luke Kuechly.
It was. I read that article yesterday. Dude, I had, like, trade up for Josh Rosen, but keep Tyrod.
Yeah.
I did have signed Star Latulale, though, so yes. There we go. But I think everybody knew that was coming. But continue, yeah. D'Lo.
So my second one is that Cole Beasley is going to set the Buffalo Bills single-season record for receptions this year.
Whoa.
So I went. This is more scintillating. Only one player has hit the century mark in receptions in the Buffalo Bills history, and that would be Eric Moulds in 2002.
And good for him.
And I'm going to say Beasley's going to hit at least 101.
Ooh, hoo, hoo. That'd be crazy. That would be something else. But yeah, we talked about it earlier. There's a connection there, and like I said, Allen, it has been, and I think will continue to get the ball to Beasley quickly off the line and just let Beasley do the rest. Yeah. So yeah, if that, especially if like John Brown and Robert Foster aren't creating space, which it's hard to imagine them not creating space, because they're going to have to run the ball as well. So they have to get the ball to a lot of people this year. But I think, yeah, if Beasley shows that he is capable of just getting the ball and picking up yards after the catch, yeah, I could see Allen looking to him quite often.
I mean, I'm thinking he'll get, you know, somewhere between 8 to 10 targets a game, maybe even more. So, I mean, whatever, 100 divided by 16 is...
Yeah, he's going to need an average of about 6.5 catches. Yeah. Six to seven catches a game.
I mean,
and he had 5.25 in the preseason game. So
the caveat to that should be he'll have like 101 receptions, but he won't hit 1,000 yards receiving.
Ooh, wow. Okay, yeah. That's
hard to do.
Yeah, that's hard, but
it's gonna be like Jarvis Landry.
Yeah, well, Landry can't run after the catch. That's Jarvis Landry's thing. Cole Beasley can, but guys, I just thought of something. They targeted him 5 times in the first quarter yesterday. Oh. The last time they did that was to Sammy Watkins, who got traded. So are they going to trade Cole Beasley? Is that what's going on right now?
That is not what's going on.
Okay. Okay, yeah. I think that's a good prediction. Jeremy, anything to add to that?
No, I mean, I think it just helps support my bold prediction of him making the Pro Bowl. So
there we go, complimentary.
Yes, no, I think he's, and it's been written about a lot, right? Just how good of a receiver he is for Josh Allen, and the fact that he can create space. Like, how many times, guys, have we talked about Bills receivers cannot get open? And this was, you know, back when Tyrod was quarterback. You felt bad for Tyrod because no one could separate in the secondary, and he had to make an absolute perfect throw or, you know, come up with the right route combinations that could shake a guy free. And you just have a guy who's naturally in the slot that can create space, I think is just, it's so pivotal for this offense. So I agree full-heartedly with D'Lo's prediction here.
Excellent.
There we go. All right, guys.
Let's hear yours, Kyle.
We're approaching the hour mark. Oh, and we have the final bold prediction. And it's not even that bold. It kind of sucks that we're ending this with this. But, okay. My prediction is that Christian Wade makes the 53-man roster. Last week, we saw in his first preseason game, very first touch, he took it 65 yards to the house. And I think after that game, everyone was like, okay, it's a good story. It's really cool that that happened. We were on the podcast, and I said, if he can show some prowess as a receiver, I don't see why you wouldn't keep him on the 53-man roster. But then, in the preseason game against Carolina, Wade showed that it wasn't a fluke. That if you get the ball into his hands, get him in open space, he's going to break some tackles. He's going to use that rugby strength, get off some guys, and he's going to use that speed that made him a rugby superstar to get you a lot of yards. We saw that, I think it was a 48-yard reception, a catch and run, which I think if he can do that in the rest of the preseason, if he can string together not even those explosive of plays, but just show some football IQ, I don't see how you keep him off the 53-man roster, given his just unique combination of strength and speed and just overall skill. Like I said on the podcast last week, if anyone listened to that, if he shows prowess as a pass catcher, we know that he can break off the big run, but can he pick up yards after the catch and even catch the football? And if he can, I don't see why you would keep him over TJ Yeldon, because TJ Yeldon, he really didn't show anything in that preseason game. I don't think he showed anything in the preseason game against Carolina either. So if you could use Christian Wade as just a gadget guy, just somebody you trot out once or twice a game, and you either just hand it off to him or put him out wide and just get him the ball quickly and let him do the rest, I think you do that. I don't see why you wouldn't do that. And then just to add on to that, I've seen more from Wade in this preseason than I have from Yeldon. And then people can argue he's played against third and fourth stringers in two quarters of football. Let's not say this man who has never played football until a few months ago is going to make the 53-man roster. But also, if he showed that he's good and he's better, or I don't even want to say better, but is more productive than another guy who you're paying more money to, and you think you can use him in more ways than you can use that guy, I don't care how many times he's played football. I don't care his football IQ. If his role is seriously just, okay, we're going to put you out there three times a game and give you the football, you find the hole and go, and learn how to follow blockers, I don't care about his football IQ. Just get him the ball. If he's a talented player and he's better than your other players, play him more than the other players. So that's just my prediction, is that Christian Wade has shown a lot in the preseason, and I think he's more than a good story. I think they're going to put him on the 53-man roster just because they don't have an explosive player like that. McCoy doesn't have that explosiveness anymore. Gore never had that explosiveness. Singletary, speed isn't his strength, whereas it is Wade's strength, and also strength is his strength. So, I really could see him making the 53-man roster. I don't know if you guys agree, but that's my bold prediction.
I don't agree, but okay, cool. It is a bold prediction, so I'm on board with it. But I just don't see a spot for him just yet. I see practice squad for him, but I just don't know 53.
Jeremy, you're a big Christian Wade fan. You have a rugby jersey.
I do have his rugby. Well, not his. His name's not on the back, but it is his former.
It is
rugby
a
team.
Rugby jersey.
Yeah, it's his former Wasps. It's his Wasps, club in England. Just because I played a little bit of rugby and I love the sport, and when the Bills signed him, I was ecstatic about it. I'm kind of with D'Lo on this. Not sure. I'm just not sure, because it's such a crowded backfield, where the Bills would want to keep him on the 53. He's not going to really contribute to special teams right now. I do love his low center of gravity, the way he runs, the explosiveness, the speed. You make all really valid points, and probably will be the discussion the coaches have after this preseason is said and done. I don't think it's an easy decision. I just don't see, with his just, still raw learning the game, why you would want to take a roster spot from him right now. But would I be shocked? I think slightly, if he made the team, just because of that raw ability still. But he's definitely proven to be a player who can show a lot of promise. and I'm definitely rooting for the guy. Mm-hmm. I think he's probably surprising the staff.
Yeah.
I don't think that they probably figured he would be this successful this soon, which is a good problem to have. I just don't know, you know, how he's going to, you know, crack the 53. You know, if they were keeping, if the, you know, each team was allotted to keep 58 guys or something like that, sure, you know, I think maybe he makes it. But I think he's just, you know, perfect practice squad guy. And I think he's a great back to have your defense go up against, you know, in practice, for that reason. So there's a lot of running backs in the league that are built similarly. So I think he can mimic stuff for, you know, game planning and for practices leading up to a game week. But yeah, I'm kind of with D'Lo on this one. It is a bold prediction, Kyle. So I give you props. And also, this wasn't a bad one to end with. I think he's been more than just a good story, like you said. I think he's definitely a player. I just don't know if it's this year right now.
You guys are probably right, especially given the crowded backfield. And again, he has only played a handful of American football snaps. But if it comes down to him and Yeldon, because, okay, look, McCoy's a lock, Gore's a lock, Singletary's a lock, maybe Perry's, you could say Perry's a lock, but I don't necessarily know if he's a lock. He's a special teamer. Yeldon, I thought he was a lock, but he's shown really nothing this preseason. He looked fine in the Carolina game, but he didn't blow me away like Wade did. That sounded weird, but, you know, the point stands. But, like, with Christian Wade, I think he's just, again, it's been against third and fourth string defenders, but he's just an explosive weapon. He's something that you don't have outside of him. So put him against some first and second stringers in week three of the preseason. See if he can do that against good players. See if he can break off the big run, the big catch, the big run after catch against actual players. And if he can, I would keep him over Yeldon just because I think he has better tools than Yeldon does. Yes, Yeldon has more experience. He's been playing professional football and just American football in general for much longer than Wade has, but I think Wade's the more explosive player. I think he has talent that Yeldon just, I don't know if he's ever had it, and he certainly doesn't have it now in my opinion. So it would be great. It'd be a great story. It already is a great story, and it would just be topped off with a 53-man roster spot for him. But again, we'll see if that actually happens. Anything you guys want to add before we get out here?
I'd love to see him make the roster. I just don't see it. I think it'll be fun, though, if he's a guy that is on the practice squad that'll still be associated with the team and really working with them, you know, very closely. I think that would be great. I just think it's tough to learn all the nuances of the position in such a short period of time, you know, going down to, you know, blocking or, you know, coming out of the backfield or whatever it may be. It might take him a little bit more time than I think the coaching staff would be comfortable with him being out there so early.
But they wouldn't use him as a blocker. That's like what I've been trying to say whenever anyone brings this up. Like, oh, there's a lot of, like you said, nuances to learn. Run blocking, like going out of the backfield, etc. That's not his role. His role isn't primary back who has to know it all. It's not power back. It's not, you know, hybrid back. It's secret weapon. It's put him out there when you need a big play. Do not let him run block. Just get him the ball and say, see hole, run through hole. I don't care about his football IQ then. He knows how to see a hole, and like he said in an interview after the Carolina game, he knows how to run to space. When he sees space, he runs to space. He knows how to do that. That's all I want him to do in the regular season. So, I don't know. I don't think it's going to happen. That's my bold prediction, so I kind of have to say I think it's going to happen. But it's hard to imagine it actually happening, but like I said, I think he's a very talented player, and I think he's somebody who would at least be very fun to watch in the regular season. So before we get out of here, I skipped over this segment earlier, and I apologize to all of our diehard fans that I skipped over this beloved segment. It's not Buffalo Fight Night because there were no fights this week at joint practices with the Panthers. Nope. Or actually, there kind of was. We had an Ed Oliver, Cam Newton stare down. So let's throw it to you, Jeremy. Who would win in a sanctioned MMA fight in the octagon? Ed Oliver or Cam Newton?
Cam Newton's got the reach.
Yep.
So in the height. And I just think like a roundhouse kick from Cam Newton would be nightmarish. But at Oliver, if he can get inside and grapple, I think he's got the advantage. So, but I'll go with Cam Newton just because of the reach and just the I think he's just, you know, probably could last a little longer. I bet he's a little bit more, you know, no offense to Ed. I'm sure Ed's in great physical condition, but just a bigger guy. If it goes 6, 7, 8 rounds, you're gonna have a winded Ed Oliver, and I think Cam would stay fresh longer, and I think that'd be also advantageous. So I'll unfortunately pick Cam Newton in this MMA bout. That would be my prediction.
D'Lo, how about you?
I'll go with Oliver.
Ooh, okay.
I'll go with the quote unquote little guy in the battle. I got to go with him. Hopefully he can just get Cam down on the ground and make him tap out.
Yeah, I got to agree with Jeremy. I think it's Cam. In that video, Cam just kind of, he really towered over Captain Munnerlyn, kind of towered over Ed Oliver. Everyone saw the Ed Oliver stare, but get him in the octagon. And like you said, Jeremy, get him a few rounds deep. I think Cam's just, he has more physical tools. He's more of a physical specimen than Ed Oliver is. I love that describing phrase, physical specimen. But, yeah, Cam Newton, yeah, I think, like you said, he's got the reach. I think he has most of the advantages, so I'd say Cam Newton in that one. Also, I skipped over, this was the segment I was referring to when I said the diehards love it. I get, again, thousands of tweets every week saying that everyone loves this segment. It's the Hofbrauhaus update.
Oh, God.
The Hofbrauhaus update, guys. I went past Hofbrauhaus yesterday again, and they're painting. They're painting on the outside, guys. We're getting closer to the opening date of August 2019, and they're painting. It doesn't look like it's going to open in August 2019 or even 2019 in general, but hey, there's something that was a different color than it was the last time I saw it, so that's great to see. I love me some German beer, some German cuisine, some German culture, and it's great that I'm going to be able to experience it right here in downtown Buffalo. You love to see it. So I think that's all we have for this week, these 6-7 bold predictions for the Bills 2019 season. Make sure to follow us on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. It's at the Bills Wire on Twitter, at Bills Wire on Facebook, at the Bills Wire on Instagram. We're trying to up our Instagram game. Get us to 10,000 followers, please. I don't know how many we're at right now, but hey, if you haven't followed the Instagram, that'd be cool if you did. Make sure to follow us on Twitter. D'Lo, what's your Twitter?
The folks can follow me at Jay DeLauro, and that's me on the Twitter.
The hot take siren is here.
Hot take, there it is.
At last.
Christian Wade.
It was 5 minutes too late. Jeremy, where can people find you on Twitter?
It is just my name, no underscores or dashes or periods or anything like that. So it's just at Jeremy, last name Uhas, starting with a J.
That's where you
can find me.
There you go.
1,825 followers, by the way, on Instagram for us. So I think we can get to 2,000 here before, you know, well into the season. That'd be pretty nice.
By the end of this podcast.
Is that actually all they have on Instagram?
Instagram is 1,825.
Oh, well, I was under the assumption we were much closer to 10,000 followers. Okay, I don't do the Instagram. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at Kyle Selege, that's what it is. Make sure to read the Bills Wire articles. That's billswire.usatoday.com. Maybe my Josh Allen Cole Beasley article will be up by the time this podcast comes out. Make sure to listen to the Bills Wire podcasts hosted by Matt and Jeremy. Make sure to rate on iTunes and all the other podcast services. I only listen on Spotify. You can't rate there. So, hey, my bad. So, yeah, thanks for listening, guys. We will talk to you again next week. Bye.